Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what kind of a conversation you might hear. It's all over the map. Never the same show twice. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. This is something for your good-to-know file. This popped up. This is courtesy of the Daily Caller. A highly influential long COVID scientific paper is now under investigation for what is being referred to as data errors. Don't act surprised, Cyrus. An influential paper espousing the dangers of long COVID is now under investigation by the very journal that published it. The January 2021 paper titled "6-Month Consequences of COVID-19 in Patients Discharged from Hospital, a Cohort Study," has been cited more than 1,600 times and referenced multiple times by the World Health Organization, according to Retraction Watch. It was recently flagged, however, with an expression of concern by the editors of The Lancet, the prestigious medical journal that initially published the paper. In view of, and here's a quote from The Lancet, "In view of the extent of these data errors, we now issue an expression of concern about the 6-month paper while we investigate further, including further statistical and clinical review of the corrected data. We will update this notice as soon as we have further information." The expression was issued after a reader noted some discrepancies between the data in the paper and a follow-up publication that used the same set of cohorts.
You do not know what you are talking about.
Well, hear me out. Where have you been lately, by the way? I actually was really getting used to you not being around. He just popped in. He always says the same thing. He left. Yeah. He just stuck his head in the studio. Okay. Author Bin Chow, who worked on... I didn't know he had an access code to get into the building.
I'm
He's like Santa
out.
Claus.
Don't go to me
He's
for
like
a second.
Santa
I'm kicking
Claus.
This guy. I'm kicking him out. I've had enough.
Change the code. Man, he was in and out.
You get out of here.
That's right. You get... All right, let's get back to serious science here. Author Bin Chow, who worked on both papers, has not publicly commented on the expression of concern. Chow is a researcher at China's National Center for Respiratory Medicine. Researchers have not yet been able to agree on a standardized definition of long COVID. Generally speaking, it refers to lingering COVID-19 symptoms months after an initial infection and occurs even after someone is no longer testing positive from the virus. As many as 150 different symptoms have been linked to the condition at various points. It almost sounds as like everything is COVID. Anything you get, you have sore joints, COVID. You have psoriasis, dandruff, COVID. I don't know, maybe I'm misreading it, but 150 different symptoms? Leading some health professionals to...
I can't contain myself.
150 different symptoms that they say are somehow associated with long COVID. Now, I am obviously not a physician. I'm not a scientist, but I can read. It just seems weird. Others have advocated for continued pandemic era restrictions. We know who they are, such as mask and vaccine mandates due to the alleged threat of long COVID. A recent report issued by the Department of Health and Human Services suggested bringing back widespread masking due to the condition. Cyrus, how do you vote on that? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
That's a big thumbs down.
Widespread masking.
No, thanks.
That could be a band name, widespread masking.
I'm not listening to them.
So how many of the 150 different symptoms do you think you have?
7.
that reminds me. And we're going to post this so you can read it. It's got links to the studies and such if you're interested in reading it. If you're a scientist, all the more so, because these are in these peer-reviewed journals like The Lancet. When I had COVID, back in the day, back during the pandemic, when I had COVID, I didn't even know I had it. I just felt kind of draggy all week long. And I just didn't put two and two together because I didn't have any of the what we we're told at least, were the classical symptoms like fever and body ache and
losing sense of smell.
Well, funny you should mention that, because that's what tipped me off. By the end of the week, and I just kept working. I kept doing what I do. I didn't take sick days or anything. I just didn't feel great, but I didn't feel terrible. And one morning, it would have been probably maybe Sunday morning, something like that, I got up to make some coffee, and I put my nose up to the coffee grounds to inhale that delicious, wonderful smell of fresh ground coffee, and I didn't get any smell at all. I thought, what? It can't be stale.
Uh-oh.
Could it be stale already? I mean, no smell, no aroma at all. So even still, it didn't click in my mind. So then I went and I thought, well, what else can I smell that would be very powerful, very pungent? So I went to the bathroom and took out my big bottle of Listerine, unscrewed the cap, put my nose up to the Listerine, nothing. That's when I realized I have it. So I immediately, and I had just taken a couple of COVID tests. I had had a physical like a week earlier, and my blood test had come back, and it was a quick turnaround. So like within a matter of like 3 days or so, they had my blood test, and they tested for COVID, didn't have it, no antibodies. I had also done one of the nasal ones where they go up into your brain. Did you ever have one of those done, Cyrus?
Yeah, that was a real pleasant experience, the 8 times that I had to do it. I work with a buddy in the movie industry, my buddy is in the movie industry.
You're in the movies?
Not anymore. And he had to do this twice a week. He had to have that nasal swab, that brain where they go, they go up through your nose and they touch the back of your head.
Very unpleasant. It doesn't actually hurt. It's just really unpleasant. Without pain, hard to explain. But people listening right now know what I'm talking about. They know what you're talking about. So I immediately went and got tested, and it was positive. But here's the thing, and I left a popcorn trail so I could get to where I wanted to go. And that is, my sense of smell did not even begin to return for probably at least 6 months. Long COVID, I guess. But I didn't have any other symptoms or of any kind. And then when it started to come back, I noticed that it was broken, that I could smell things, but they didn't smell the way they normally did. So foods that I love, like celery, I love celery. And it's honestly, this is the only word I can think of to describe it. It's hard to describe what it smells like now, but it smells like dirt. It just doesn't smell like celery. And there are a few other things like that just no longer smell the right way.
I had the rancid smell. It's like, what's dead in here? Something is dead in my walls. And my wife's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you don't smell that? It is, I can't even stand it. I can't even be in this room.
And then I can relate to that.
And it was
that
only
happened to me too.
That was the weirdest thing for me. Even worse than losing the smell is the random rancid smell.
I had, it's funny you mentioned that too, because I had the exact same situation months and months and months after I had had COVID. And thankfully, none of the symptoms were really much of anything. I wasn't in bed. I didn't have problems or anything. But there was one day when I walked into one of the rooms at home on a weekend, and I thought, oh, what is that horrible smell? And it was so overpowering. And Nancy came and said, I don't smell anything. And I think we even had maybe some house guests. They came in. I don't smell anything. Really weird.
Yeah, very strange.
So I guess I had one of the 150 symptoms of long COVID. But that's long gone now. I can smell clearly now. The rain is gone. You don't remember that song. That's okay. It's okay. We have a show to do. 888-914-9149. I just wanted you to know about that COVID news. And if you want the story, courtesy of the Daily Caller, go to the show Twitter feed, which is at P Madrid Show, or you can go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick.
I was just getting nervous because Fauci was in the window waving his finger at me. So he was not happy with any of that.
Well, he must listen on the Relevant Radio app then. Because after he left the building, he must have continued to listen.
Yeah. He can't get enough.
That's good.
That's a good thing.
That's good, though. I like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good for you, Fauci.
888-914-9149. Let's go to Steve now in Elsa, Texas. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Hello. I have a quick question. My question is, like, how far do you go to realize you're honoring the saints too much? I ask because, like, I have a necklace of a saint under the name Father Pio, and every time I'm wearing it, I'm thinking I should have God there instead of one of the saints. I don't know if that's going too far, or I would like to hear what you have to say to that one.
Fair enough. Well, are you married by chance?
No.
No, okay. Well, I am. I was going to say, pretend you're married. If you had a picture of your wife on your desk, or if you had a picture of her, you know, let's say in a chain around your neck, not that men typically do that, but I'm trying to use an example by way of parallel to say, if you paid extra special attention to your wife and her picture and you love her and all that, would that in any way diminish the glory of God? Would that in any way... Yeah, let me just ask this way. Would that in any way compete with or denigrate or undermine or minimize or diminish your love for God and your giving glory to God? Would it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. In other words, St. Padre Pio, the Blessed Virgin Mary, you name the saint, these are friends of God. They love God. And so for you to extol what God has done in their lives, that's a good thing. It actually glorifies God. In fact, Jesus said in John chapter 17, he said, Father, I have given them the glory that you have given me, referring here to, you know, his apostles and his disciples and his mother, I'm sure. So if Jesus can say in his high priestly prayer to the Father, I have given them the glory that you have given to me, it shows that that the Lord is not stingy with his beauty and with his grace. So when you have a special devotion to one of the saints, you're not competing with your love for God or diminishing it. If anything, I would say you're expanding it and intensifying it, because not only do you love and glorify God, but you also are loving and glorifying his friends, whom he himself has glorified, which is good, I think. St. Paul also says to give honor to whom honor is due. You know, so the whole idea of recognizing the saints is a good thing insofar as you're recognizing what God has done in their lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that boom, that made an explosion in my head. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Sometimes the light bulb does go on like that, doesn't it? It's a great feeling. You know, when you think it through that way. But anyway, that last passage was Romans 13, verse 7. Pay taxes to whom taxes are due, revenue to whom revenue is due, respect to whom respect is due, and honor to whom honor is due. And when you think about it, who are the most honorable of all people? Those are the ones who love God and are now in heaven with him, perfected in righteousness. They certainly deserve honor. All good?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Okay. I didn't know if it was responding. Thank
That's
you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You got it, Steve. Great talking to you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Helena now. Or Helene, excuse me. Helene in Queens. Good morning, Helene.
Good morning, Patrick. Patrick, I received a request for a Catholic missal, a daily and Sunday missal from a family member as a Christmas gift. What can you recommend in terms of the company and the missal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me recommend the Magnificat missal, which is a subscription that you can get for your friend or your loved one. And I think it will probably be even cheaper to do it this way than buying a hardcover missal. Those aren't cheap. They're wonderful, but they can be pricey. So Magnificat is the company, and it is a monthly installment. So you receive the missal each month, and it has all the prayers and all the readings for that month. And then when that month is over, or actually shortly before the month ends, you'll receive next month's missal in the mail. So that way this person would have not just the missal and all the contents of the missal, but beautiful prayers and meditations and other extras that are in the Magnificat. It's beautifully printed. It's on very fine, almost like Bible paper. So it's a soft cover book, but it It will lie open. If you put it on the table and open the pages, it'll lie flat. It's really beautiful. And my wife and I have used them for many years. I think if you were to get a subscription to that, that would be probably well received.
I know about Magnifica, and I do like it. But if I wanted to get, you know, the one where the whole year is included, mm-hmm. I appreciate your warning me about it being expensive. But if you would recommend one of mm-hmm. those, what would it be?
I would recommend the Catholic Book Publishing Company. They're the publisher of many different books like this. And mm-hmm. so if you okay. were to go to their website, so it's catholicbookpublishing.com, and just look at the different, they have a variety of different missals, Bibles, Lives of the Saints, things like that. They're quite good, and they're sturdy also. So as I yeah. have their website in front of me, I see right here on the right, St. Joseph Sunday Missal. And if you click on that, it opens up a page where you have a variety of other missals.
That I remember from my youth, St. Joseph Missal. But I think mm-hmm. we had one side Latin and one side English in the 50s. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. yes. I wasn't there in the 50s. I came online in 1960. But in 1960, they were still using those Latin-English
yes.
missals. So
yes.
I have a vague childhood memory of that. And then, of course, I've seen them later. I think they still have that missal where you've got the mm-hmm. Latin on the left page and English on the right. I haven't mm-hmm. looked closely at this, but you probably would find it there.
And did you hear of a St. Paul missal? Someone said that to me, and it wasn't familiar.
Hmm. I don't know if I have, but if I had to guess, it's probably printed by the Daughters of St. Paul. Pauline Publications, I think, is the actual title. The Daughters of St. Paul is a religious order of sisters who work in the media, and they have a publishing
yeah.
arm. And it may be from them.
I remember them. I think they had a store in the Belmont section of the Bronx. Years ago, I
that
think, unless I'm mixing them up with someone else, but I think they were did have that store. Well, I really thank you. I like Magnificat myself, so I just have to mm-hmm. wrestle with what would be the best thing.
You got it. Well, I think either way you go, it's going to be much appreciated from whoever you give that gift to.
And Patrick, what was who was the Jesuit author for the biography of St. Francis Xavier?
Oh, is that you who called about him yesterday?
No, but I was very interested. I thought that was a wonderful conversation you had.
Yeah, it was. His last name is Broderick, and I forget what his first name is. James Broderick or
James
William Broderick.
Well, yeah. Broderick.
So what I would suggest is if you're gonna look it up, just look up Biography of St. Francis Xavier, Broderick, S.J., and you'll find it. It's right there.
Patrick?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Patrick, my final question, and I appreciate your patience. Mm-hmm. I used to get, when I was a kid, a series called Vision Books. They would come just about every month or so, and they were written for children. Do you remember that, Vision Books, possibly published by Doubleday, but not sure? They were wonderful biographies for children.
Mm-hmm. I remember that Doubleday, and I had one of my books published by the Doubleday imprint, Penguin Random House is the parent company. And I remember in school, in Catholic school and grammar school, we would receive these flyers, like multi-page flyers that would have all kinds of books that were available. And it may have been from that, but it's only a childhood memory. I don't know that I've seen those mm-hmm. since. Now, Image is an imprint of Doubleday. I don't know if it's still being used anymore. But in my personal library at home, I've got scores, if not more, of books that were the Image imprint from Doubleday. Excellent quality.
Yes, yes. Thanks for everything you do, Patrick.
You're so kind. Thank you, Helene. Nice to chat with you. And We're not quite at Christmas yet, but an early Merry Christmas to you. Yes, I know, we're still in Advent. This is the season of Advent. Don't get antsy about that. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show, including your phone calls. And if you would like to participate, give me a call at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I also have an interesting email that came in from a man who needs some courtship advice. I'll read that too. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, riding down Santa Claus Lane.
Good choice of music today.
Yeah, happy St. Nick's Day.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you wake up and Santa put some, what's the tradition? That there's a boot outside your door?
Are you Canadian?
A boot?
No. The deal on that is that the actual St. Nicholas, who was at the First Council of Nicaea, this is in the year 325, so the Roman Empire had just eased up on persecuting the Catholic Church, and the Emperor Constantine, he converted. He wasn't baptized till nearly the very end of his life, but for all intents and purposes, he became Catholic, and he ceased the persecutions, and then rather quickly turned the Roman Empire in the direction of the Catholic faith being the official religion of the empire. So he was alive at that time. And the story, and it's a true story, it's verified by historical details that have come down to us, but in one particular situation, there were three daughters, I believe it was, young, nubile girls, probably late teenage years, I guess, and they were very, very poor. Their family was just poverty-stricken, and there was a real danger, a clear and present danger, as Tom Clancy would call it, that these daughters might have to resort to prostitution in order to eat and stay alive. And so he became aware of this. He was the bishop. And so he one night came to their home, and through the window, he put little, as the story is told anyway, little pouches of money, of probably gold coins. And the way the story is told, that he dropped them through the window into their shoes. And so they had enough money for a dowry so that they could get married and avoid the horrible possibility of prostitution. So that's where this the story of, you know, St. Nick giving gifts, I mean, it really did happen. And that's not the only time it happened, but that's one of the examples where he gave gifts as a way to rescue people. And so that became associated with him, which became associated with Christmas. So there's more to the story, but that's kind of that little tidbit of it. Interesting.
Yeah, what a legacy.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine? You're starving, you're cold, you're poor, you're about to get turned out of your house, and you're a defenseless woman, and suddenly now you have the means to get out of that terrible predicament and have a dowry to get married. Great thing. Candy in the Shoes. So Thomas just mentioned Candy in the Shoes. That is a line from Jamiroquai, and I forget the name of the song. But Thomas, I don't know if you know that. I don't even know if you know who Jamiroquai is. It's a band, not a person. Anyhow, let's get back to the show. Tom in Chicago, good to have you on the program. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick, and thank you for everything you and Relevant Radio do. Reading your book now, Dogma of Hell, the one you recommend.
Yes. It's not my book, but I do recommend it.
Mm-hmm. In my experience, the people I speak to think that in order to go to hell, you either have to murder somebody or rob a bank. and otherwise default is heaven. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, what is the minimum you have to do to get to hell?
To hell? Okay. Well, yes. The minimum, really, it's the minimum and maximum. I'll answer your question this way. What you need to do to go to hell is to die in the state of mortal sin. And there are many different kinds of mortal sin. It doesn't really matter what kind it is. And there are different levels of gravity within that category. It doesn't really matter how grave it is, but as long as it's grave sin and you die in the state of unrepentance, Jesus refers to it as blasphemy against the Holy Spirit. That's all you need to send yourself to hell, is to die in that state, to die unrepentant. Isn't that terrible?
Yes.
And I'm reminded, Tom, of what Jesus said in the gospel, where he said that the road is wide and many travel it that leads to hell, and the gate is narrow and few find it that leads to eternal life. So it seems that more often than not, at least in my reading of the gospels, Jesus warns more often about the danger of going to hell than he does about the promise of those who go to heaven. So I get the impression that, and I'm not trying to be overly pessimistic here, but just reading what Jesus says gives me the impression that it's far more likely that somebody can go to hell than to go to heaven. And like he says in Revelation chapter 3, for example, he says, I wish you were either hot or cold, but because you are neither hot nor cold, you are lukewarm, I will vomit you out of my mouth. So even just lukewarmness, not robbing liquor stores, not killing people, not doing spectacular sin, just being lukewarm and negligent and lazy, even that, it seems to me, from how I read it, could be enough for somebody to go to hell, because he would not die in the state of grace. So something to think about, if nothing else, right?
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. You answered my question.
Happy to do so, Tom. Thanks for calling in. And by the way, I detect a slight brogue in your voice. Are you from Ireland? And
yes.
If so, where from?
Yes, I am. I am from Ireland, correct. And I did send you an email actually yesterday, a place called Monaghan in the north of Ireland.
Okay.
And a lot of my friends there are listening to Relevant Radio during the day, because they're 6 hours later. So then you come on there from 2 to 5. So it's an easy time in the afternoon to listen to you. So you're very popular there. And thank God.
Shout out to all of our Irish friends like you, Tom. Are you in Ireland now? You're in Chicago now, right?
I'm in Chicago right now. I'll be in Ireland hopefully in June.
Awesome. Now, is the town you just mentioned, is that near Armagh or is that somewhere else in the north?
The town I come from is a place called Castle Blaney, and that would be probably 25 miles from the town of Armagh.
Okay. I've been there. And, you know, it's sort of out and about in the area, but I don't know the area well enough to recognize the name that you just said, but I know where Armagh is, so
yep.
Awesome.
It's nice to have a big cathedral there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We had mass there one day.
Hmm.
Well, Tom,
yeah,
thank you so much, and thank you for everything you've done and continue to do to help people in Ireland know about Relevant Radio. We sure appreciate that.
Okay, and if you're in Ireland in the summertime, stop in and visit.
I will.
Welcome.
I will. I'll look you up. Thanks, Tom. That's cool. Cyrus, look at that. If you're ever in Ireland, you know who to call, right?
I'm getting my plane ticket right now.
Yeah. Oh, go. If you get a chance to go, it's one of those, you know, and I have a feeling, and I don't know how an Irish citizen would respond to this. I think maybe we as Americans have a somewhat idealized version of Ireland. But when I went there, it was everything I thought it would be and more. Kind of a beautiful, wonderful place to be. And I had an Irish person I was talking to when I was over there last time around, who said, you know, this is just like regular life over here. It's not magical. You know, we have to pay our bills and the weather is not always great. And so I guess in my mind's eye, Ireland is this fabulous
not
place.
Not magical.
But
that's just
I wasn't
they say
disappointed.
To keep you away from their pot of gold.
I was not disappointed. In fact, it was everything I thought it would be and more. 888-914-9149. How about Patrick now in Monterey, California? Good morning, Patrick.
Hi. Question on Jesus's brothers.
Okay.
On Mark 6, 3 through 4, it says, is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, brother mm-hmm. of James and Joseph? I got that. I understand those ones mm-hmm. are in the Bible. But mm-hmm. Judas and Simon are not accounted for, as mm-hmm. far as I can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, this tracks with Matthew chapter 13, so almost the same verbiage there. And these four men who are named, James, Joseph, Simon, and Jude, the first two are the sons of Mary, the wife of Clopas, also known as mm-hmm. Alphaeus. The second mm-hmm. two are not told to us what their exact relationship was. So some mm-hmm. people have held the view that they are perhaps the sons of Saint Joseph from an earlier marriage, and that's given the presumption that he was a widower. Others don't believe that Saint Joseph had ever been married before the Blessed Virgin Mary, and so then those two, it could be accounted for as being close kin. They could have been nephews of Saint Joseph. They could have been younger brothers of Saint Joseph, for that matter. In that culture and in that language, so in Aramaic and even to the extent of Hebrew, they would refer to close male relatives as brother, nephews, cousins, etc. So we don't know who those two were exactly, but we do know that they weren't the sons of Mary, the mother of Jesus. That much we do know, just as James and Joseph were the sons of a close family member named Mary. She was at the foot of the cross with the Blessed Virgin Mary in John chapter 19. But Scripture just doesn't tell us the exact relationship with Judas and Simon. Now, St. Jude Thaddeus is understood to be a close blood relative of Jesus. In fact, my middle name, Thaddeus, was given to me by my parents in honor of St. Jude Thaddeus. And just by way of background, he has for many centuries been associated with impossible cases. And so my mom had a miscarriage before me. I'm ostensibly the oldest child of eight, but there was one who died in miscarriage before me. And the doctors, as doctors sometimes do, told my mother, well, no more kids for you. And so they went on a novena and asked St. Jude Thaddeus to help with this issue. And it wasn't that much later that I came along. And so they gave me his name as my middle name. He seems to have been a cousin or some close male relative of Jesus, maybe in terms of blood relationship, perhaps the closest of all. So,
how do we know Mary didn't? They're not from Mary.
Well, we know because number one, Scripture nowhere says that she had other children besides Jesus. There are some passages that at first glance might appear as though that was the case, like this one, Mark chapter 6, verse 3. But you dig deeper and you realize that, for example, James and Joseph are not the sons of Mary. We also never see any other, in these key moments in the life of Christ, we don't see any of these other siblings there. So, for example, in the finding in the temple incident where Jesus was left behind and Mary and Joseph come back to find him, there's no mention of any other children. It's just Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. We don't see any mention of other siblings of Jesus living with them. Interestingly, in John 19, when the Lord is about to die, what does he do? He entrusts his mother into the care of St. John, who was not a member of the family. And I think we could rightly presume that if there had been siblings of his, sons of Mary, that it would have been. I don't want to say the word inconceivable because that sounds like a pun. I don't mean it that way, but it would be hard to imagine that he would entrust his own mother into the care of a non-family member. So that right there is suggestive of the fact that there were no male sons of her. There were no sons of her own that he could entrust her to. And many other aspects as well. I mean, we see, for example, in Luke chapter 1, when Our Lady hears the message from the angel Gabriel, she's puzzled by it. She doesn't doubt him the way Zechariah did earlier in the chapter, and he gets punished because he doubted what the angel said, that his wife would have a child in her old age. So when the angel tells Mary that she's going to conceive and bear a child, her reaction is one of being perplexed. How can this be, she says, for I do not know man. Now, she was already betrothed, and she certainly knew how babies come into existence, and her friends and female relatives would get married, and in due course, they would wind up pregnant. This is just how things are. So it wasn't like Our Lady was ignorant of how this happens. And yet her answer doesn't really make any sense if she were planning to have children. If she were planning to have children, you might think she would say, well, yeah, of course I'm going to have a child. I'm betrothed to be married, and in a very short time, I'm going to be living with my husband, and I'm hoping that we'll have children. But she doesn't say that. She says, how can this be? For I do not know man. So that is an internal bit of evidence that points in the direction that Mary had taken a vow of perpetual virginity. And that, of course, tracks with extra-biblical documentation that's not inspired scripture. But, for example, the Gospel of James, it has a lengthy discussion about Mary being dedicated to the Lord in the temple when she was a little girl, maybe about 3 years old, and that she remained there until she reached her teenage years when she started menstruating, and then it would be impossible for her to stay in the temple precincts because of the ritual impurity associated with menstruation. She herself was not impure in any way, but that was part of the Mosaic covenant, the Mosaic law, rather. So all of the internal evidence in Scripture points to the fact that Mary did not have any other children besides Jesus. It's not explicit evidence, it's implicit evidence. And as you go through all of the counterarguments of people who say that Mary did have other children besides Jesus, like in Matthew chapter 1, where it says that Joseph did not know her, which is a euphemism for sexual relations. He did not know her until she brought forth her firstborn son. People raise things like that. Or the brothers of the Lord in Matthew chapter 13 and Mark chapter 6. And all of these, upon inspection, they actually fall apart in an effort to show that Mary had other children besides Jesus. It overwhelmingly shows, at least in the implicit evidence, that she's a perpetual virgin. And I'm going to extend my answer just a little bit longer, just for the reason it's so important. In the 4th century, St. Jerome, he was really ticked off when a writer of that day named Helvidius wrote a little article or a little argument, pamphlet, what you might call a pamphlet. Of course, it was written in parchment in those days. And in his argument, he said that Mary had other children besides Jesus. So Helvidius, Jerome wrote a refutation of Helvidius, and it's called Against Helvidius. And you can read it. It's online. It's in English. You can read it. And he destroys this argument, Bible verse by Bible verse, showing that these verses don't in any way prove that Mary had other children. And furthermore, he also appeals to apostolic tradition to say that this is not what we received from the apostles. And we received from the apostles the tradition that Mary was a perpetual virgin. I'll have to leave it at that, though. Thanks for the great question. I'll be right back with more right after this quick timeout. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio lines, is hiring today. Several positions available throughout the U.S. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with COF, an Illinois Life Insurance Society not licensed in all states.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Isn't this amazing, Cyrus, that we have St. Nicholas Day falling on Taco Tuesday?
What does it mean?
It's like a hyper first class feast day. Or it should be.
It is now.
A great combo. 888-914-9149. Going back to the phones in just a minute. Here, though, is an email that comes in. And let me make sure he didn't ask me to keep his name anonymous. He didn't tell me to keep his name anonymous, so here goes. Trevor, and Trevor's listening out west. He says, I love your show, and I'm a huge fan, and I have a great amount of respect for you and what you do. Thank you for all that. I'm a 32-year-old man and new to the faith after being an atheist my whole life. Welcome home. Beautiful. I received my sacraments last year on my birthday. I recently met a woman at work, and I'm extremely attracted to her. She's a warm-hearted, beautiful Catholic woman who takes her faith very seriously, like I do. She seems to possess every quality that I am looking for in my future wife. We spent hours talking about our faith. The thing is that she's 18 for a 14-year age difference. I feel wrong for even being attracted to her in the first place. I'm all twisted up inside, and I want to do the right thing and follow my faith. I'm asking for your advice on the situation from a Catholic moral perspective, and if you could include any references from the Bible or the Catechism, I'd greatly appreciate it. All right. Well, great question. And I don't, first of all, I wouldn't say there's a moral problem here. There's not a moral problem. There's a practical question, not necessarily even a problem, but there's a practical question of, is this age difference too much? 14 years. Is that too much of an age difference? Now, 18 is a bit young, I would say, to get married. And for a young woman who's 18 years old, I would say if she were one of my daughters, live some more life. Maybe if you want to go to college or you want to work, you want to travel. I mean, just what are the things that you'd like to do with your life? Because you'll never be 18 again. You'll never be 19 again. You'll never be 20 again. So if she were my daughter, I would be telling her things like, let's see. Let's wait and see if this relationship is something that is permanent or can be permanent. And in the meantime, give yourself some more time. Give yourself some more time to know who you are, to know what it is to be attracted to a man or men, to understand what you are looking for in a husband. And one of the reasons I say this, Trevor, is because if you're the only serious relationship she has, and I don't even know if it's become serious yet, but if you're the only man that she's ever had any kind of stirring of feelings for and thinking about with the potential of marriage, you put both of you at a risk, given that she's only 18, because when she's 19, 20, 21, and she meets another man and she thinks, oh, well, I like him even more. One of the issues here when you're very young is you need, I think anyway, you need to have enough experience in knowing people and meeting people and not being married, so that when the time comes and you do make your choice and you do get married, you can be firm in your commitment. And one of the possible dangers is a young woman who marries the first guy that she begins to like, only to find out that there's so much more that might be out there, and she might have to live a life where she's not as happy as she would want to be. So that's something to consider. I consider this a practical question. Now, if you were 30 years older than her, that'd be a different story. But I don't think 14 years difference is too much. It's a lot, but it's not too much. One of the other practical things to consider is if you were to get married to her, and as you reach toward the end of your life, well, when you're 74 years old and she's only 60, or you're 84 years old and she's 70, the likelihood of you going first and leaving her alone is rather high, as opposed to if you were closer in age, the likelihood of you going first, which is probably statistically more likely than not, but you wouldn't be leaving her alone for very long if the actuarial tables obtain, you know, in that time. So that's another thing to keep in mind. So what I would suggest is, in the meantime, keep the lines of communication open. Keep talking. I wouldn't I would really be careful in pursuing her without her parents' guidance and awareness of this. And I don't know at what stage you are right now, but if it ever got to the point where you're really serious about her, you would definitely want to make sure that you had her parents' approval. If there were a 32-year-old man pursuing one of my 18-year-old daughters, and I don't have any daughters that age anymore, they're all grown up now, I would definitely, my radar would go way up. And I would definitely, definitely be focusing in on, well, what's going on here? So to help you, I would suggest that you, when the time comes, make sure that everything's out in the open, they know you, they know who you are and whatnot. And then lastly, in the meantime, is be very prayerful and ask the Lord, is this the woman? And if she is the woman, then if you need to wait for 2 or 3 years for her to grow up a bit more and to be completely sure that you're the right one for her and vice versa, that's worth it. It'd be nice to be married, but in the meantime, if you need to wait before you're married, that would be a very good thing to do. So those are my thoughts, partly coming at it from the perspective of a dad, but also understanding how you can be deeply attracted to a young woman of that age. So those are my thoughts, and thank you for writing to me. Let's go now to Marisol in Albuquerque. Good morning, Marisol. Hello, Marisol.
Hello.
Hello. How old are you?
7.
7. Wonderful. So did you have a question for me?
Yes.
Okay. What's your question?
How is St. Nicholas deliver the gifts? Because you have to be dead if you're a saint.
That's a great question. Have you asked that of your mom and dad yet?
Yes.
What did they say?
I don't know.
Well, honest answer. And I don't know if I entirely know all of it myself, but we do know that St. Nicholas was a real historical person. He was a bishop in the early church, and he died eventually, and he went to heaven, so it is true that he's in heaven as a saint. But his influence, I don't know if you know what that word means, influence. The things he does, including praying for you, also take the form of what happens on Christmas, right? With gifts and things like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So one thing to know is St. Nicholas is a real man. He's a real saint. He's really in heaven. And sometimes God lets the saints in heaven appear to us in this life. Not always, but sometimes he does. But he also has helpers. So if you went to, let's say, the mall near where you live, and there was a Santa Claus there, so you could sit on his lap and take pictures. Have you ever seen one of those Santa Clauses in a mall or in a store?
No.
Okay. Well, you're only 7. So sooner or later, you're going to see it. That is not actually Santa. That's one of Santa's helpers. And so he's there to help children understand who Santa is, St. Nicholas, and the things that he did to help people. So there are people who act as Santa's helpers, and that much is certainly true. But St. Nicholas himself is actually in heaven, and he is a saint. But how he works and the things he does, it's not always easy to explain. So maybe as you get a little older, you can ask your parents about that again and see what they say.
Okay.
All right. Have you made your first Holy Communion yet?
No.
When will that be? Do you know?
When I'm in 3rd grade.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a big day when you get to receive Jesus in the Holy Eucharist. That'll be a wonderful thing. So,
my brother already received his Holy Communion last year.
Good for him. Congratulations. Well, it'll be a big day for you too when the time comes. Thank you, Marisol, and tell your mom thank you for letting you talk to me. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I'll be right back with more right after this.